It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 604 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is our first ever Zoop.gg doubleheader featuring interviews with Tony Grigori and William O. Tyler. Everything kicks off with Tony Grigori talking about his special project, Pork Chop Robot Killer No. 1. It's described this way. Isolated in a dystopic wasteland overrun by AI-driven robots, a lone pig is on a quest to smash them all. We discuss what made this fascinating tale happen, who the characters are, and what else Tony is working on. This project will be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, September 7, so be sure to support it today. Then everything wraps up with my interview with William O. Tyler, who is crowdfunding We Belong, an all-black, all-queer sci-fi and fantasy comics anthology. William is both editing and contributing to this 100-plus page book, so we talk about how it's all coming together, who some of the creators are, and how black queer people do exist everywhere in every time and space. Be sure to back this excellent project before it concludes on Thursday, September 14. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what both creators have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. The description for Pork Chop Robot Killer is this. Isolated in a dystopic wasteland overrun by AI-driven robots, a lone pig is on a quest to smash them all. Join Pork Chop and his robot valet, Doug, on a journey to rid the world of a viral menace. Or will his duty lead him to some unexpected discoveries? TMNT and Short Circuit meets Mad Max in this oil-soaked symphony of destruction. And today I'm talking with the creator of Pork Chop Robot Killer, and that's Tony Grigori. How you doing, Tony?
Doing great. How are you doing, Wayne?
Good. It's good to talk with you. And of course, the thing we have to get to right away is you have a Zoop project going on, zoop.gg for Pork Chop Robot Killer. Yes, sir. And it's underway. It's going to end in early September. But how are you doing so far? Where are you as we're talking?
Well, the goal is 3,000 and we've raised 1,700 and we have 22 days left as of today.
Oh, good. Well,
the 16th.
You got lots of good time to get past that and more. Do you have stretch goals in mind?
Yes. If we hit 5K, we will send to the backers a 5-page preview of issue 2.
Okay.
And then I guess if we go larger than 5K, we'll have to come up with something on the fly. But okay. I'm sure we can think of something.
I think that wouldn't be too hard, probably. I imagine. Yeah. That kind of thing is always is better than the opposite. If you're straining to get to the last dollar or two. And I hope you don't have the practice. A lot of people in crowdfunding have this thing where they get on the website and they refresh, waiting to see if somebody's going to back it. And if they refresh 20 times and nobody has come in during that minute or two, they start to worry nobody's ever going to come and back it again.
Well, so. I've been doing this for over a decade, and this is probably I've done at least probably 8 successful crowdfunding campaigns on Kickstarter.
Wow.
So yeah, so I'm kind of used to the ebb and flow of it. This is my first Zoop, so this is a new experience as far as that goes. This is my first time doing it all alone without a writer, a collaborator.
Oh.
So it's definitely like a different animal, like doing everything, like all the promotional stuff.
Yeah.
Basically with myself and the Zoop, the fine folks at Zoop.
Well, that's cool. Because, I got to ask, of course, you were successful on Kickstarter. Why did you go to Zoop?
Well, on the Kickstarter campaigns, I was always working with the writer or a team of writers, and they always handled all the administrative stuff. you know, the fulfillment, the shipping, all those sorts of things. And those are things as a working artist, I don't have the bandwidth to handle, because I'm coloring Pork Chop, but I'm also drawing two other projects that are my gigs that pay the bills.
Mm-hmm.
So the time and the headspace is not there to, you know, handle shipping and packaging and fulfillments. And Zoop handles all that for me. So that was the allure of doing it through them.
That's great. And they also understand comics. You know, Kickstarter is this massive, I mean, sometimes I get emails asking me to support the strangest stuff on Kickstarter.
Yeah,
I'm going, what is that? Why are they sending me something about that? On the other hand, if you get there one of their favorite projects, that always comes in handy. That's
Because that, you know, that's the thing. With Kickstarter, it's a known quantity. And even with my friends who aren't in the industry, who aren't initiated, so to speak, if I tell them a Kickstarter, they understand what that is. But with Zoop, I've had to explain, like, well, it's like Kickstarter, but it's just comics. They only do comics. You're not going to crowdfund Greek yogurt or, you know, or whatever else is going on in Kickstarter.
Or socks, like, heated socks.
Or socks,
all kinds of stuff. Just
Pet Rock or whatever it is.
Yeah, or I don't know what. I get game stuff all the time. And unfortunately, I don't have the time to game, but I get all kinds of gaming stuff. And I'm always going, like, why did they send that to me? Because comics does not equal games.
Yeah, I think they kind of lump it all together, you know, pop culture.
I think so. So why don't you talk a little bit about the comics work you've done in the past, so people can have a good idea of what you've been doing.
Sure. I started out doing indie stuff. I did two series for Vault Comics, one called Karma Police. We crowdfunded it in 2014, then Vault picked it up and published it as one of their initial series. And then I did a second series over there called Deuce of Hearts. And then from there, I did a Dark Horse book called The Worst Dudes with writer Aubrey Sitterson that came out in 2020. And also, you know, not to mention all the other crowdfunding stuff I did. And then last year, I drew an issue of Ninja Turtles, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, issue 129. And then recently, I've done a couple of Rick and Morty covers, some for the main book, and then a couple that are yet to be announced. I've also done stuff for El Rey Network for their wrestling books. They did a line of wrestling comics for Lucha Underground, which was their pro wrestling show. I did a comic for them. Mm. I've done stuff for Oni, IDW. Could go down the line. I've worked for everybody except for Image and the Big Two, pretty much.
All right. Well, those will come. Because I know for a fact that Marvel goes through and buys indie books so they can hire people to go in and do their books. There are certain ones like David Popose, who's writing. I met him. He was doing his books. And I said to him one day, I said, you couldn't be doing X-Men someday. I just have a feeling about it because I enjoyed his writing. And he's not doing X-Men, but he did a Savage Avengers for a while.
Yeah.
He's doing Moon Knight right now and stuff. And I'm convinced it's like Matthew
Rosenberg.
Yeah. He was doing
a friend of mine.
He did a whole bunch of indie books with long titles. He always had the longest
place from here, I think, is
one of them. Something like that. And I would always wonder, you know, how does he squish them all under the cover? Because usually like one word titles is usually enough. But I get a huge kick when I saw those kinds of things. But I like his writing and stuff. Now he did Marvel for a while, now he's doing Batman related stuff over at DC stuff. So it just give it time and they'll notice you when the time comes. I think they'll be ready. So just be ready to send them the good stuff that you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which leads us, of course, right to Pork Chop Robot Killer, which is a very interesting title right off the bat. I got a huge kick when I read the description of, in fact, there's a lone pig on a quest to smash all the robots and stuff like that. I got to ask, where did this idea come from?
Well, you know, it's kind of an unlikely story.
Okay.
So my grandfather's nickname was Pork Chop. He passed away in 1986. He was from the greatest generation. He was born in 1897.
Oh, wow.
And he was a Sicilian immigrant. He came over in 1939 with my grandmother, and she was pregnant with my father at the time. Mm. And he got here and he started working as a steel worker. And he rose to foreman, and he led crews all over North and South America, down into Brazil. And he did that for 40 years until he retired. And I wanted to do a biocomic to honor him, about his story, about coming over. Because, I mean, his story is kind of, it's kind of complicated, because he came over when he was a teenager in the early 1900s and didn't speak English. And he worked at his godfather's speakeasy during Prohibition. Then he went back to Italy and married my grandmother. And then in the 30s, when Mussolini took power, he was either forced to enlist in the army and fight in World War II, or he had to go back to America because he had spent so much time in the States as a young man. They wouldn't allow him to be a conscientious objector. They were afraid of his allegiances, and rightfully so, because he didn't like Mussolini. Mm. So they told him, either you enlist or you leave. So he left. So I wanted to tell that story. But I quickly realized I was not capable of doing the level of research that would do him justice. Mm. And you know, it would be a shame for me to do a half-ass story about him. Mm-hmm. Instead, I didn't know what to do. I still wanted to do something to honor him. And I loved calling the book Pork Chop, but I had no idea what that book would be. But at the time, I was drawing all these robots in my sketchbook, all these piecemeal bots, like, say, I'm at the laundromat, and I would piece together a washer and dryer with other elements, you know, that you see in everyday life. Or say I'm at the DMV and I'm taking a computer and I'm putting things together to make a robot that way. And I showed my sketchbook to my friends, and they really enjoyed the sketches and the drawings. And they told me I should do something with this. I should do a book about these robots. And I kind of, from there, I reverse engineered it. And I figured, well, what if the character Porkchop was kind of fighting these bots? Because I wanted to draw big action, but I didn't want to draw a bunch of human or animals getting ripped apart in through violent acts.
Mm-hmm.
But robots, they have no soul. So, you know, if they get torn apart, it's fun and games. So, and originally it was going to be a guy named Porkchop, but that didn't make any sense to me. So I quickly just said, why not make it a pig? Because if it's a pig named Porkchop, I don't have to explain why his name is Porkchop. Because it's clear why his name is Porkchop.
Okay.
And I kind of reverse engineered it from there. I figured out the story from there.
Wow.
It kind of became a labor of love.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting. I wasn't certain how this came to be. So that's really good. So why is he a robot killer? Enjoyed the drawing of the machines and stuff?
Well, that, and also it's a little bit of my, like, the little bit of the Luddite that's in me, the fear of technology and I first conceived of it in 2018. That was before AI was in the forefront of, you know, the discourse and such a hot button issue. But even back then I was wary of, like, technology and kind of the encroaching robot overlords that we're staring at.
Mm-hmm.
And our increasing reliance on technology to get through the day. And it was just kind of like a way for me to kind of get that out of my system or kind of speak to that. But to be honest, the story kind of evolves in a way that you come to find out that perhaps technology and AI isn't the biggest threat or the biggest menace. And you find that out as the story goes.
It's so interesting because he's on a quest to smash them all.
Yes. The robots, basically, he's a pig, so he loves rolling around in mud, and he loves eating potatoes and French fries. Eventually, you find out that so the first issue drops you right in the middle of his adventure, and then you have a 10 to 12 page cold open of an action set piece, and then you meet him, his robot valet Doug. He's kind of like his Alfred, and you are introduced to his oasis where he lives. It's near like a lagoon. And they have like a potato farm set up like in The Martian. Mm-hmm. And they have a little fryer set up, a little fry station. And his robot makes him French fries. He loves French fries.
Okay.
But the problem with the technology and the bots, they ruin all the grass and all the green.
Oh.
They call it the green. So everywhere they go, they destroy the foliage and the plants and the vegetables and the beautiful green that surrounds him that he loves to roll around.
Oh, okay. Because on the first, I got to see on the website, there's the pages. And on the first page, I think it is, he says, green is gone.
Yes.
Which interesting. And of course, he has like leaves, doesn't he? He has leaves on his shoulder. Yes. Why does he wear the leaves on his shoulder?
Well, it's kind of like, it's a sentimental object to him. He likes to carry with him. He represents it. It's like his shield, like his impetus, his motivation.
Cool.
You know, he likes to carry with him. He likes to represent, you know.
Oh, cool.
So like the green to him is like that's his badge.
Oh. So because he looked out and he says, green is gone. He goes, crump. He's looking apparently at like a machine, like a base, I guess, for the machines.
Yes. Yes. And that's just like one enclave. So that basically like bases like that prop up all over the landscape, all over this dystopic post-apocalyptic landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And everywhere that those things prop up, they destroy all the life around it. So he's basically on a mission to destroy all of it, which, you know, he comes to find out it's kind of a hard task because he's only one pig and there's a million of these things.
Mm-hmm.
So you come to find out why that is and how he can kind of come to grips with that and what he can do to either, you know, mitigate that or, I mean, I don't want to say too much. I don't want to give it away.
No. Don't get this. It looks like it's fascinating. And it's on some levels, it's actually kind of funny, you know, kind of a little bit of humor to it and stuff like that. Now, I got to ask, though, the hammer, he uses a great big hammer. It's called Robot Killer. I thought it was going to be Robot Smasher when he was going to the hammer.
Well, you know, killer is a figure of speech, right? I mean, how do you kill what isn't alive, right? So,
right.
But the hammer is more like we talk about my grandfather. Mm-hmm. My grandfather was a steelworker, like I said. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I kind of was imagining him with his outfit. So, like his gear, I wanted to look blue collar. I wanted to look like he could work at a factory, you know, and the hammer is symbolic to me of like someone just, you know, a blue collar worker with grizzled hands and calloused hands smashing metal and using blunt objects to destroy things.
Mm-hmm.
Which to me also, you know, because it's like a gun, you have to reload it with the with a hammer. You just swing it. So, and it's also like it's just funner to draw him smashing things with a hammer than him shooting things with a gun or what have you. But also in the cold open, you know, he uses the hammer a little bit, but then he also uses ingenuity and some technology that him and Doug have perfected to kind of how can I say this without giving it away? Kind of finding the end result that he's looking for.
Right? Okay.
So he wants to destroy this base. He can destroy a base with a hammer. So he uses another way.
Now I'm kind of curious because the computers, the hammers, the computers and stuff like that, all they have very limited communication skills. Looks like.
Yes.
The first one I see on page 2 has a question mark, and then he makes a blurp sound.
Yes.
And then, of course, in comes the hammer, and the question changed to an exclamation point, which made me smile right away. I thought that was funny. And then, of course, you get other ones, and they're all going burp and blurp and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Is that their computer language, or why do they say that?
Yeah, it's kind of like instead of just putting a binary code, which isn't funny, you know, I decided to have them speak in like stereotypical beeps and burps and bleeps. But Doug, his robot valet Doug, who's probably the most loquacious and verbose character in the book, he speaks in full sentences. He's almost like an English gentleman. And that also plays into a larger plot where you kind of find out what differentiates him from the bots that Porkchop is encountering, and why is Doug friendly to Porkchop, and why does Doug help him, and why is he not an adversary like these bots he's encountering, which, you know, Porkchop doesn't fully understand. Because, you know, he kind of takes Doug for granted, and that's part of his journey. Because Porkchop goes on his own arc; he has his own emotional journey as well. So, but the robots, you know, like for example, there's the giant. I guess it's page 4. There's a giant giant mech bot that pops up out of the ground. It's made of like a video game,
yes,
and then like a saw blade and like giant speakers with amps and stuff.
Yeah, and it's got
it just says bong. That's all it says is bong.
Yeah, at the top. Yeah, but the name on the machine says Tac-Man, which of course is an allusion to a certain video game that many of us grew up on. And
maybe. I just don't want to get sued. So
And then they've got the little blue ghosts and the happy smiley face on there and stuff. Made me laugh when I saw that. I said, that was, because you know, yes, how many Saturday nights I spent with, and got blisters on my hand from playing that certain game.
And where I live right now, there's the apartment building I live, there's a basement area where the property manager has a little office set up, and they have a Ms. Pac-Man machine down there, and it's open to the people who live here. So I go down there sometimes, and it's free. There's no quarters or anything. I go down there, and I will still play Ms. Pac-Man for hours.
Wow. I used to get, like I said, I got blisters on my hands. I would wear gloves sometimes to try to protect my hand from getting blisters, because I'd spend, I would take like $5 in quarters and just spend the whole Saturday night trying to get past a certain level and stuff like that. Because
it gets hard.
Especially there was a video game parlor that I went to, they called it. And
well, I remember, I'm almost 47, so.
Well, I the thing that got me was that you could tell that the difficulty level had been turned up. I went to other ones where they were a lot easier. When I got to that one, that was why I'd be there all night straining on it and stuff like that. Because, man, it was so much harder than other machines that I had.
Yeah.
And of course, that tracked me all the more. The harder it was, the more I wanted to play it and be it and stuff. So I'd set many Saturday nights, me and a bunch of quarters. I spent many quarters at that video game parlor. So when I saw that, that reminded me a lot of all that stuff. So I got a huge kick out of that.
Good.
There's all kinds of wonderful illusions and stuff. And of course, the whole business about technology and AI and stuff, you couldn't be putting this book out at a better time.
Yeah, you know, and I didn't even, because I conceived this in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
It was the summer of 2018, and I had done like the first 12 pages or so, and I put it up on my Patreon. I did like a page a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then in October of 2018, unfortunately, my father passed away, and I took, I kind of went radio silent and shuttered my Patreon and didn't work for like 3 months while I was settling affairs and dealing with grief and all those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went back to work, I started working on The Worst Dudes for Dark Horse and all these other projects that, took me away from doing Pork Chop anymore. But every once in a while, I would draw a page. I draw a page like every couple of weeks. I would either have the free time or I would feel the muse to do it, I would do it. And then, about 6 months ago, I was looking over my files and I noticed I had like 40 some odd pages drawn for this book. Wow. And that's when Zoop started come into the spotlight, and that's when I went to them. Mm-hmm. But like back to what you're saying about AI, at the time it wasn't like an anti-AI screed. I wasn't like thinking like, oh yeah, the AI is coming and we're all screwed.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's definitely like the tip of everybody's tongue. So now it seems fortuitous or kismet that it's kind of like you said, it's like now it's here and I'm doing this book, and maybe it resonates with people on that level, and that would be great.
Because it drives me crazy when I go out like to eat and stuff like that. And I look on all these tables are people sitting with their cell phones. They're not talking to each other. They're sitting, two or three people are sitting there on their cell phones. And then they barely take look away to be able to eat stuff and stuff. And I'm always going like, man, the technology stuff is just, I don't see people walking in the street anymore without a cell phone, with their head in the cell phone.
And sorry.
It just drives me crazy to see that. I don't understand. So I can really relate to a pork chop on those levels.
Yeah. Well, it's like, it used to be that it was just, you'd be like, oh, these young people, they're all buried in their phones. But now it's everybody. Now I see people of all ages, senior citizens buried in their phones. And, I'm wary to get on a soapbox about that because I don't want to seem like the old guy yelling at clouds, like from The Simpsons, like upset about technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. This is the world we live in. But I do you're walking down the sidewalk and I'm the type of person, like if I go walk my dog or go run errands, if I can leave my phone at home, I will leave my phone at home, not take it with me. Because, who needs it if I'm going around the corner to go to the grocery store or taking my dog down to the park? I don't need my phone with me, But it's one thing when you see people eating and sitting, but then if you're walking down the sidewalk and there's people burying their phone and you're trying to get out of their way, I don't want to bump into you, but they're kind of swaying as they're walking and you're taking up the whole sidewalk, not paying attention. And you kind of want to be like, hey, but that's rude. So I get what you're saying. Like, it's definitely annoying. And But I definitely, like, I will do it myself at times. I'll catch myself doing it if I'm, like, out and I'm on my phone. So now, like, I'm very conscious about if I'm out with my friends or if I'm out, you know, eating dinner or out somewhere, I try to not, like, I put my phone away and I try not to bring it out because I want to enjoy the moment, you know?
Yeah. Oh, see, that's the thing. I think we lose a lot. And I always feel like, you know, the people who are who, and you know, it's funny, you're right about the seniors and stuff like that. I was at a Star Trek convention one time, and there was a computer in the lobby. Tell you how long ago it was. The people now had their own phones and stuff. And there was this line of senior citizens going on there to check their email. and I looked at them and I thought, I didn't think they did anything on the computer as far as that went.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's Facebook, right? It's all,
yeah,
you know, it's all senior citizens on there now, just saying the craziest stuff.
So is Porkchop set on, it's a dystopic wasteland. Is this Earth, or is this like another planet, or is it just like your world building here? What's going on with that?
Well, I make it a point not to explain how we got to this point.
Okay.
Because you know, I don't know if it really even matters, you know, like,
yeah,
okay. it's like maybe some like some variant future or some like other future that we could experience, you know, like I don't explain how Porkchop became a like talking anthropomorphic pig. Like, could it be factory farming? You know, could it be like some sort of like weird like animal testing gone wrong you know, led us to this point? Like, maybe I kind of leave that up to the reader to come up with that on their own, because I mean, you know, that's all been done before. And I want the story to move forward. You know, I don't want to do a lot of backtracking, and because that really doesn't matter, because then eventually at the end of the day, it is what it is, and there's nothing, you know, you can't go back and change it, so what's the point,
right?
But also, like, yeah, I mean, you know, is it our Earth? I mean, yeah, because you see, like, what, it's a couple of bots or like made of like PS3 consoles and vacuum cleaners, okay, you know, and things like that, and like computer monitors and laptops. So I mean, it's definitely Earth adjacent. If it's not Earth 616, it's definitely one of the multiverses. So
it's this is kind of a warning tale. So
yes,
okay. I've talked with several creators, and you know, one of the things I always want to know how things get the way they are.
Yeah.
And you're not the first creator to tell me that. And I say, well, how did this get like this? You know, and they always say, I don't know. I don't care about that. All I care about is telling the story. And then I always go, okay,
well, it matters if it matters to the story.
Yeah.
You know, if it's part of the plot and if it matters to the overall story to explain how we got here, then yeah, I think you should say how we got here.
See,
you know, but if it doesn't matter, and then it's just wasted wasted pages, you know?
Well, if it distracts from the story, because, you know, I always like to tell the story. They one time in the Batman comic, a long time ago, they showed the utility belt, and they showed what was in each pocket in the utility belt. And one time in one of the books, he reached to go his batarang, and he reached on the wrong side, and he pulled the batarang out, and all his letters just pour it in. How can you do that? That's not the right side. Was his belt upside down? What happened? Why was the? I don't want to get to that point. I do because I'm a Star Trek guy, and to me, you know, all this worry about canon and stuff like that is, I worry more about, is it a good story?
Yes.
Did I get
it? That's really what it comes down to. But you know, for Star Trek, it kind of matters because you're telling a larger story with this big lore, and there is canon, and it's been going on for generations, and it'll keep going. So yeah, maybe explaining it does matter. But for Porkchop, like, you know, I'd be happy if I'm able to fund this one, and if I'm able to do more, that'd be amazing. And if I was able to do like even more, then maybe I could get into like how things got to where they were. You know, but for me, it's like, I'm just lucky to be able to tell my silly little robot comic in 4 issues if I'm able to do that, you know?
Well, you do have a number one on there.
Yes,
so that's a good. That's an optimistic place to. This is the first one.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of good things that could come of it. So.
Oh yeah, I have the whole 4 issues arced out and plotted. So
how
I'm
many?
Able to do it.
So how many pages are in Porkchop Robot Killer Number One?
32 full color.
Okay.
32 full color pages.
So are you done with? Have you finished all the pages?
I'm coloring them right now. They're all drawn. I actually have half of issue 2 drawn as well.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, I had like 40 some pages drawn. So,
wow, so there is a future for Daryl Porkchop.
God willing, you know, I don't know, reader willing, I guess, Zoop willing, depending on if people back it and support it, you know. Great. If it funds, I'm definitely doing another one. So.
Oh, great. Well, I love the artwork, but I think you really enjoy it. You know, I think the story is fun. There's all, I am drawn to strong, silent types.
Yes.
You know, as characters. And, you know, I'm probably the little guy going around saying, why are you doing that? Why are you doing that kind of stuff? I'm probably the annoying sidekick that goes around and wants to ask all the questions. All he does is go,
He speaks a little bit. Like he has a limited vocabulary. Most of his sentences will like three words long, but there's a couple times where he has a little bit of a run on sentence and he'll kind of pontificate slightly. But like for the most part, I wanted it to be somewhat of a silent comic. But like I said, the robots talk more than anybody else and all the robot dialogue is hand drawn. So all that's hand lettered and then Porkchop, I digitally do his lettering, but for all the backers in about a week, I'm going to release another 4-page preview the next 4 pages, the sequence that is on the Zoop. So, you'll see more of him and more of this opening set piece, action set piece that kind of jump starts the book.
Now,
he talks in it, you know?
Uh-huh.
But it's a lot of like grunts and snorts and oinks because he's a pig.
That's true.
I didn't want to lose that. I didn't want him to become like a, you know, Shakespeare.
Now, I got to ask, do you have pages of original art for sale?
Yes.
Which leads me to ask, you hand drew all these pages?
Yes.
Okay. Because, you know, if you do it on the computer and you're just printing them out, then nobody cares.
Yes. So no. I'm a traditional artist.
Okay. Because I was going to wonder too. Because you have this feeling about computers. If you were actually using a computer to draw, I would go. Mm.
Yeah. I do it. I use a computer to color. Obviously. And I use a computer to letter. And then I will use the computer to do edits. Like, say I mess something up and I need to swap out a panel or whatever, what have you. I'll use the Photoshop or I use an open source program called Krita that I run on Linux. That I color with and I can do digital edits with and things of that nature. But like I'm predominantly traditional. Still pen and ink is my go-to and that's what I use. And I enjoy it. I don't like staring at a screen all day. It kind of hurts my eyes.
Well, but you see, that's good though, because now you can sell the original art.
Yes.
But just that's one of the advantages. Whenever I talk to people who do stuff on the computer and I helped out with an indie comic, the guy did everything on the computer, and he could never sell the original art because it was just a printout.
Yeah, and no one really wants to buy that.
Nope, you could make 20,000 of those if you want to just print them all out. But you have the advantage of, and you're doing this, is you actually can sell the first appearance of Porkchop for $300 as you do.
It's pretty cheap. I think it's pretty cheap.
Oh, yeah. And then you got other pages for $150. There's another $300 page in there. But see, you can do that now. That's one of the advantages of doing things by hand.
Yes. Is
that you can actually sell the original art and make some money off of that. So I applaud. Unfortunately, you may be a part of a dying generation of that. But
that's fine. You know, I'll be one of the dying few, the last few. And
you'll still be able to make the money off of it. That's the good
news. Yes. If somebody buys them, yes.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they will.
Also, there's a commission tier, which, you know, you'll get the original art of the commission. But I'll offer a tier where I will color it digitally if you want. Like for example, like one of the previous Kickstarters I did, there was a bunch of commissions I drew, and then a couple of people paid me extra money to color it. And I would send them a digital file, and they can go print it up in their own. You know, however they want to print it up, they can go to their local print shop and print it up themselves. And I just send them the digital file that only them and I have, you know, the high res that's printable, you know, and then it's theirs. And they get the original art as well. So that's a tier as well. On the there's a 9x12 and 11x17.
I see that the Daredevil picture is quite nice. Thanks. He's got what do you call those things on the hands? The
sticks? His bow staffs or his gloves?
He's got the I've drawn a blank. The things when you punch somebody you're not supposed to wear because they do more damage.
Oh, you're talking about the 9x12. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brass knuckles.
Yeah. He's got brass knuckles on, which I've never seen Daredevil wear brass knuckles. So that's something new.
Yeah. Pretty cool. The commissioner was like, yeah, draw Daredevil, but I want him to have brass knuckles. And I was like, well, I'll put little crucifixes on him because, you know, Daredevil and Catholicism go hand in hand.
Yeah. Very cool. Very nice. I really love the coloring too. I think the way that you color him, because, you know, I've always thought that Daredevil's costume was the least interesting of the bunch because he's just red.
Yeah.
You know, but you make it really pop out very nicely. I really like the way it looks.
Thanks. I go back to the old Frank Miller, David Mazzucchelli Daredevils, where, you know, it was red, but like the gloves were a lighter shade of red. Mm-hmm. And also like the shadow in his costume carried the form. So the red almost just accentuated the form that was already there that he drew in pen and ink.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's like, for me, for my work, I prefer my colors to be simple and almost flat.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like one tone or two tone, like a cell shading type style. I don't think my artwork looks very good if it's overly rendered, because my style, I feel, like is cartoony and graphic.
Mm-hmm.
Like a graphic style.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a John Cassidy or somebody like that, where it's like you can airbrush it and overly render it and it looks great. I don't know if that works for me.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, if I'm coloring my own stuff, it's pretty easy. It's just like color choices.
Mm-hmm.
As long as I'm not like making bad choices with my colors, I think I can make it pop and look suitable.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
This is the first time I've ever colored my own stuff for print. Well,
really?
That's not true. Well, that's not true. Sequentially, this is the only time I've ever colored my stuff for print. But I've done Rick and Morty covers where I colored it, drew it and colored it and everything. So
makes sense. Okay. It says on here, too, that you're expecting to be able to go to print in October, and you're aiming for a December this year fulfillment.
Yes.
And provide updates and delays. Now, of course, that leads to the question. If people want to keep up with you, like on social media and stuff like that, how do they do that?
Well, on Twitter, Twitter X, whatever you want to call it, I'm at Tony Gregori, TonyGregori. And on Instagram, it's Tony Gregori, but it's spelled TOEKNEE. I got a little clever with it. So it's like Tony. Gregori.
Okay.
And then on Blue Sky, it's the same as Twitter, Tony Gregori.
Hey, you're another guy that's gotten on Blue Sky. I'm still waiting for them to tell me I can go on there.
I got an invite if you want one.
Oh, really? Well, send my way. I have never gotten on. I've been waiting months. I've been trying to get on there. So yeah, just we'll talk afterwards. As far as that goes, but so yeah, it's great that you're doing. Now, let me ask you something. Are you? Because you know, after the pandemic, the conventions are starting up. Yeah. Are you planning to go at any? Be at any conventions?
Well, no, not right now. So I had planned on going to Emerald City, and so I live in Missoula, Montana.
Okay,
I'm about 6 to 8 hour drive from Seattle and Portland. And I planned to go to Emerald City in Seattle in 2020. I was going to table with my buddy Matt Miner.
Then
the pandemic hit, like right around the time of the con, if you remember.
I remember.
Ever since then, I haven't been to a con. I applied for Emerald City a couple times and they rejected me both times, even right after I had done work on Ninja Turtles. It was in my credits and they still rejected me for a table. So I kind of took that as a sign of like, maybe I'm not not on there.
Put Rick and Morty on there. I bet you get in if you say Rick and Morty.
I mean, I'll try next year, but I'm not going to hold my breath.
Because I love that convention.
And so do I. I mean, I've been to it so many times. I tabled it like 3 or 4 years in a row. I tabled in San Diego 3 or 4 years in a row. And then it seems like something happened after the pandemic where I don't know what it is. Like maybe there's more demand and there's more people and there's more artists.
I'm just
not on their radar.
I think people are wanting to get out of the house is what I think is going. They're all flooding to go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, it's I would go to Portland or Seattle. Like I could go to Rose City and get a table pretty easily. It's just a matter of like the logistics and financials. Like for me, it's like, is it worth the money, the effort to go there? Am I going to make my money back or at least break even, you know, at the table? And for Rose City, it's a little harder because it's a smaller show. Mm. For Emerald City, every time I've gone, I've made a lot of money and I've done really well for myself.
Well, Emerald City, this is, it's a whole building, you know, you got floor after floor. I was at the, I was there, I was helping somebody at a table, and the con had ended, and the guy that we were kind of helping, we're working with, all of a sudden he calls and says he forgot stuff on the top level. And we're down on the basement level trying to mail stuff to him. I had to run up the stairs to get to the sixth floor, and it was under one of the tables. And I ran and got it, and I ran down. We had to package it up and send it out. And it was a long line of people trying to mail things at that.
Yeah.
Such a great con, though, I have to tell you.
I love it. It's my favorite one. I've been to a bunch, and I've been, you know, I love New York, too. New York was fun. But for me, Emerald City is the best because I feel like Seattle is like, well, it's close to home, and it's cheaper than New York. And, you know, I feel like in Seattle during Emerald City, that's kind of like it. That's, you know, that's the big thing that's going on. You know, New York is always like, it's New York. There's always a million other things going on.
Well, that's, see, that's the thing that gets me about New York. You know, I went to San Diego one year, and the next year I went to New York. San Diego takes over downtown. In fact, one of the people when I was there, and I was trying to get a bus pass. I went to the travel agency and the travel bureau, whatever it is, and the lady behind the counter, she said, "Well, why do you want the pass?" I said, "Well, I'm going to the Comic Con." "Oh," she says, "we hate it when you guys come here. You take over the whole city." And I was like, "Wow!" I thought, "Okay, that's a nice hot welcome."
I lived in San Diego from 2007 to like 2011. And I did the con every year, and I worked, I was a bartender as well. And I worked at all the bars, well, not all the bars, but a bunch of bars in the Gas Lamp and in Mission Beach in San Diego for those years. And I would, you know, I would take off during the con because I was trying to break in at comics at that time. And that was like the impetus for me moving there. And I was, I would take off, and all my friends who worked in the bars with me hated that time of year. And it was for me, it was like, it was like Disney. It was like going on vacation at home. But they all, like you said, they all hated it because it was just you know, in the day with people. So I definitely know what that's all like.
Now, see, it's funny. The contrast is you go to New York and you walk two blocks away from the Javits Center. They like, don't know. They don't have any idea it's there. And that's such a fun. We were on the subway at one time, and there was a guy dressed up as the Hulk. And people just ignored him. Just like, it happens all the time. And I got such a kick out of that because it was so different from San Diego, you know, where everybody's running around in costume downtown. And I actually, after I was there for several days, I have to say I got a little tired of people in costume. I was kind of like, I wanted to go back and see people wearing regular clothes, you know?
Well, you know, like I said, I haven't been to a con in probably since 2018, and I definitely miss it. And I would love to go back, go to a table at a con again soon.
Cool.
And I'm hoping I will. I'm hoping maybe towards the end of the year or next year. But you know, it's all it'll happen when it happens. And right now, I'm kind of busy with work and working on projects, and it's kind of not really in the cards for me this year. I don't think
it made me smile though when I looked at the cover. Now, Porkchop is wearing a mask. He's got a face mask on.
He's got a face mask on.
Was that? Did you draw this during the pandemic? Is that why he's got a mask?
No. It was in 2018. I drew that in like maybe 2019. So it was a while ago. I drew that cover. That was the cover for the Patreon book, for the Patreon series. And no, it was all just you know, he was wearing a mask because it looks cool.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Again, the book is called Porkchop Robot Killer Number One. Go to zoop.gg, and I always have to, I like to spell it out. zoop.gg/ the letter C as in cat / Porkchop Robot Killer. All one word. And you'll find it there. And it's going to conclude by early September. Don't wait until then, because Tony doesn't want to have to keep looking and waiting for pledges to come in. Be sure to get there and support it early. I'm going to get in here, and as soon as we get done, I'll go in and sign up for it, because I'm dying to see what the story is.
There's a whole, and there's also variant covers by two friends of mine, Ramon Villalobos and Brian Level, amazingly talented artists who've worked on Marvel, DC books, Image books, Bad Idea books. They're two invariant covers. There's a tier for those as well. They're the book itself is $9. The variants are $10, and there's a package where you can get all three covers for $27. And there's also a tier where you can get three prints of mine, mm-hmm. of your choosing. There's a selection of prints, 11 mm-hmm. by 17 prints, and mm-hmm. you get that in the book for $35, mm-hmm. which I think is a pretty good deal because the prints mm-hmm. I usually charge $15 mm-hmm. to $20 a piece.
Wow.
So.
Wow, very cool. Now, one of the things you can't do in this book yet, anyway, is you can't have somebody get drawn in to a comic. I haven't seen a human being yet, so
there are no humans.
That's right. So you can't really do that. So
you know what I did do on the Patreon mm-hmm. on the page isn't up on the it's not one of the preview pages,
mm-hmm.
but it's like page 8 or 9 in that sequence.
Mm-hmm.
I did a thing on my Patreon where patrons could design a robot. So they would tell me three elements in a bot that I would draw. Mm. And I believe on one of the pages, my friend told me I wanted it to be like a PlayStation console, a microwave, and like, I forget what else it was, and make a robot out of that. And so I did, and I smashed it. He smashed it. And then I wrote just the Patreon's name on the robot, mm-hmm. like as part of like the decal or the logo.
Cool.
Yeah. So that was something I did do. But no, there are no humans in a book, but mm-hmm. there are other animals and anthropomorphic creatures that show up later on in the book and towards the end of issue one. You meet a animal that has been turned into a roaming internet hotspot, so to speak. Phones. And that's all I'll say. And you meet him towards the end of the first issue.
Cool.
And in the second issue, there's something I like to call a techno whale.
Okay.
That will explain itself when you see it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I get to do the second issue, and hopefully if it's, you know, cross my fingers, it gets funded, you mm-hmm. will see the techno whale in issue two, and it is funny.
See, this is all very interesting to me. I actually like books that are very creative with their characters and the situations and stuff. So this book really appeals to me. I think I'm going to have to make sure I get in and support it because it sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, we do.
Adventure and stuff like that too, so it's really good. So be sure to go again. It's Pork Chop Robot Killer #1, zoop.gg. Be sure to get in. And Tony, it's great talking with you, and much success. I'm sure this is going to be a big success. And when you get around to doing #2, we'll have to talk again because I think that it'd be fun to see how things have developed.
Yeah, I'd love to, Wayne. Thanks for having me.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne, as a man. From flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but it's a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
William O. Tyler is a comic creator, editor, and critic whose work often focuses on the intersection of love and horror. That's an interesting place to be. His comics include Anxious Acts, which explores the horrors of anxiety from a black and queer perspective. He co-edited the queer horror anthology Theater of Terror, Revenge of the Queers with Justin Hall. William is also half of Tannis Comics, a collaboration with his partner Dave Davenport. And we're here today talking about a Zoop.gg product called We Belong, a comics anthology composed of 100 plus pages of sci-fi and fantasy stories that center on the queer black perspective, all from queer black creatives. So how's it going, William?
Hey, I'm doing good. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's good to talk with you. I'm really curious about this because there's some information on there, but it feels like this book is still coming together. 100 plus pages, different stories, and there's a long list of creators. And unfortunately, I guess my experience is such that I haven't been exposed to many of them. So why don't you talk a little bit about how the book came to be?
Well, We Belong is a anthology of queer black creators and queer black characters through the lens of like sci-fi and fantasy. Victor Kearney, who's my co-editor on the book, just saw that there was a lack of this kind of perspective, the queer Black perspective in comics. We see a lot of like Black comic anthologies that don't have a lot of queer stories in it, or we see a lot of queer comic anthologies that don't have a lot of Black stories or Black characters in it. But we wanted to put together a book that kind of encompassed both the Black and queer experience, because it's a very dynamic experience. As someone, you know, who is Black and queer, at least I feel it's a dynamic experience. So, yeah, a lot of the creators in the book are either creators that often get overlooked because of this, which is why you may not have heard of them, or we also have a lot of fresh creators who are actually creating comics for the first time in this book. So it's going to be a very interesting mix of you know, our experience and what's being put together for this book.
You know, when I started to do some research for this, I actually went through and I thought about a lot of the comics that I've read, and I can't think of a queer Black character. I can't even think of one in television.
Well, we're there. We're definitely there, but we're in the pockets. I mean, that's kind of what it means to be of a marginalized identity, is that you end up in the margins. You aren't really seen by the mainstream. And so, yeah, that's kind of why we thought this anthology would be good to put together, to try to get some of these creators and their stories out there more. So, like, one of the creators that we have in the book is Rupert Kennard, who is historic. He actually had the first comic strip that was syndicated that featured a queer Black character. So we have a couple of his historic comics that we're reprinting. I was able to meet with him and curate a selection of comics to include in this anthology. And he's also going to write the foreword for us, because he kind of is like the queer Black, you know, historic creator. So it'd be nice to get his perspective on what it was like when he was creating these comics in the 80s. And, you know, compared to what it's like now, what the landscape is like now.
Well, why do you think that is, that queer Black characters tend to be so hard to find in quote-unquote regular comics?
Well, I think it's a combination of a few things, because we do have, there are a lot of Black characters in comics, obviously. I mean, we have a lot of very iconic Black characters, but a lot of the Black experience looks down a bit on queer people or queer characters. And so you don't see that love there when you get the Black characters. And on the opposite side, we have a lot of queer characters, but as the queer characters, you know, steep more into the mainstream, they're usually white, and they're usually male or at least cisgendered. So there isn't a lot of representation. I think also the queer creators and queer Black creators don't get the opportunities that they usually, you know, that other creators usually get as far as working in the mainstream. And so our stories end up being more in independent comics or in, you know, self-publishing altogether. You know, you'll see a lot of queer Black creators at like zine fests and stuff like that, because it's a lot smaller and a lot more manageable to do on your own. But we wanted to get a lot of these creators together so we could have a community through this anthology.
What about like FlameCon? It's in New York. Is there representation there?
Yes, we actually were at FlameCon.
okay.
Well, we're really happy that we've been able to partner with Prism Comics, who is a nonprofit organization that promotes LGBTQIA comics, creators and characters and stories. And they've been very helpful in helping us put this book together. And Stack Deck Press, who is the publisher of this book, has worked with Prism on other projects. But Stack Deck Press itself is one of the first trans-run comic publishers. So we're really keeping it in the family. So we had representation at FlameCon, and we also had, actually on the exact same day in New York, we had representation at, I'm sorry, this one's in Philadelphia, but still on the East Coast. We also have representation at the Black Label Comic Con, which is, you know, promoting all Black comics. So, so yeah, we're out there. We're trying to be out there, and we're pushing to be out there.
There's a Black science fiction con that happens in D.C. The name escapes me. I thought I had some friends go there, but that's also an interesting place. That would be a great place to be. I'm a little behind, I guess, on what the it calls the alphabet. It calls it LGBTQAIU plus now. I don't remember the U being in there. Do you know what that is?
Well, I'm used to using A for asexual. So it's LGBTQIA is how I use it. I know some people do use other letters. There are a lot of letters to keep up with, I will say.
Yeah, I find that a little confusing sometimes.
That's why I end up just saying queer as kind of an umbrella for everyone.
Sounds like that's a better idea. That I can figure out a little easier than this. Like I said, it takes me a while I don't even know what the U stands for. I'm not sure. Is that unisex or something? I don't know. So anyway, oh well, we'll find out. So I'll have to do some other research to find out about that. So how many comics have you actually made as a creator these days?
Myself? I've been making comics since 2004. My first comic came out in 2004. It was called The Goth Queen Needs a Mate. okay. And what's interesting is that, like I said, I am queer and Black. My very first comic centered on a white heterosexual relationship, where this woman who lost her, spouse, goes into this grieving process, and out of it, she awakens gargoyles, and gargoyles then recreate a husband for her. And I was so focused on creating what I thought the industry wanted to see from me, as opposed to what I actually wanted to create, that I kind of got lost in creating that type of a story. And now I'm in the process of going back and retelling that story, but from a more, queer Black perspective, and adding other characters into it. But that was my first book in 2004. Since then I've done, a number of comics that I've written and drawn myself, and then I've also edited a number of other. This is the fourth book that I'm on as an editor. The others were, there was a short-lived series called Queer Bait that came out in the early 2000s that I edited. And then the first big anthology that I edited was Theater of Terror, Revenge of the Queers with Justin Hall. And then I also edited an anthology called Yellow is the Warmest Color with Sonia Saturday. I've been doing a lot of stuff. I've also had web comics. I'm currently running two web comics on my Patreon, which are the Anxious Acts comic that you mentioned earlier. And then another one called Siren O. That's all about a modern day siren from Greek mythology. So,
because I haven't run into these. I'm a lunar and diamond kind of guy. So I've seen, how do people access these books? I don't want to take away from this one. Of course, once again, this is called We Belong. It's on zoop.gg. And we talked a little bit about, and it looks like the goal is $20,000, and you're pretty much, you're getting there and could use some more support, I think. And so we went down. I'm interested in that. So I'm just curious as to why it's called We Belong. Where'd the title come from?
Well, it's that idea that, like I said, we end up in the margins when we have an identity like this. And we are often told that we don't belong. So as a joyous way of celebrating ourselves, we want to say, oh, we do belong. We absolutely belong in sci-fi and fantasy stories. We belong in comics. We belong in all kinds of fiction. You know, whenever we get like the Little Mermaid with Halle Bailey being a new black mermaid, or you get black characters written into the Lord of the Rings series that Amazon Prime has done, there's always this big backlash from people. The same with queer characters. If you add a queer character into a story, there's always this backlash that people think that you're ruining their stories or taking away from their stories, or that queer or black people don't belong in fantasy. Like we can't exist in these other worlds, which is absolutely ludicrous. So that's kind of the idea behind We Belong, is just to have these stories where we are celebrating our identity within these kind of fantasy sci-fi settings, because it's okay for us to be there. It's great for us to be there, and we do belong there.
Well, it would seem so, because, you know, and science fiction people are supposedly more open-minded and more used to, let's say, different kinds of things, as opposed to maybe people who are not into science fiction. They're allowed to stretch their minds a little more than say, other people.
Yeah.
The thing I'm curious about is there like a network of you guys? And because I haven't, like I said, I don't know these folks, and I'm just kind of curious about it. How do you guys, I mean, where do people get a hold of the books that you make? I mean, obviously we go to zoop.gg for We Belong, but is there like a network, or is there like a group or something, is some place that we could go to find these kinds of things? How do we do that?
Well, there are little pockets of things. Like Prism Comics, as I mentioned, they have a website, and they are at almost every single major comic convention in the country. They are always like the mecca of queer comics at conventions. Like if you see, if you're at a convention and looking for queer comics, then Prism Comics is the place where you end up. And they have a huge roster of creators that work with them, and books that they sell and make available to everyone. But outside of Prism, it kind of is a like independent hustle. you are out there either tabling yourself at conventions or at small expos. Small Press Expo on the East Coast is a good one that I've been to a few times. There's the Alternative Press Expo. There's been all kinds of stuff over the years, all kind of conventions that I've made appearances at over the years. But in addition to that, it's you know, actually networking directly with bookstores to get your books in their stores. There's a lot of, I think that, you know, the proper way that we're used to distributing comics, in the industry is through Diamond. But sometimes because of the content that we have being queer, our content is automatically censored, even when it's not adult. Just the idea that we are creating something from a queer perspective, it gets censored. And it's sometimes hard to go through the what are seemingly the easier channels to get your book out there. So for us, it's a lot of hustling and networking with each other. A lot of us do know each other, but there are still, you know, other creators who don't really have the access to the conventions and stuff to get to know everybody else or to be a part of Prism. So there's a lot of online social media networking. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of us have our own online stores that we sell our stuff from. So it's a very like grassroots effort for us most of the time.
It sounds a lot like indie comics.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Because that's exactly how, I've been involved with indie comics, and we spent a couple of years going to conventions and stuff like that and trying to get Diamond to pick us up, which they didn't at first.
Yep.
And so I've gone through a similar experience, because I'm always interested in how people make things happen, because it's different, you know, and I'm grateful for crowdfunding like Zoop and stuff, because years ago, all these wonderful stories we probably never got to hear because DC or Marvel wouldn't pick them up.
Exactly. Yep.
So I'm always interested to see how this kind of thing is. But it was leading me to the question, though, because 100 plus pages, is it not completely final yet? Are you still putting together parts of the book?
Yeah, we are working on it at this as we speak. All our creators are. We do have some finished stories. Some of the stories are almost finished. So our plan is, by the time that the crowdfunding is done on September 14th, that we have all of our stories complete. We can put the book together and get it right off to the printer. And we're planning on debuting the book at LA Comic Con at the beginning of December. We'll be at the Prism booth at LA Comic Con.
Okay, that's really interesting because it sounds so familiar to the experience that we had putting an indie comic out. So it's really kind of interesting to me. So you're still putting the book. That's why you say 100 plus. It's not 100% sure exactly how many yet.
Yeah, it definitely is going to be over 100. I think the last count I took, we were at maybe 150 pages. It's going to be a pretty big book. Like you said, there's a long list of creators, and a good chunk of those creators are doing stories that are about 10 pages each. So it's a lot of different stories, and there's a lot going on. And it's a lot to wrangle and keep together, but we're getting it done.
Well, how did you do that? I mean, is it because of the networking that you've done in the past that you and your co-editor Victor have done? Is that how you got the stories together? Was it through this networking that you did it?
Yeah, that's where it started. There are a couple of things that we did when we decided we wanted to do this book. The first was we made a list of the creators that we really wanted to be a part of the book, that we knew we wanted to reach out to. And we reached out to a bunch of them. Some of them weren't able to do it because we did reach out to some. There are a few mainstream queer Black creators that we reached out to, and their schedules are just so hectic because they're working with the big two, that they weren't able to do it. But we did get a few people from that initial list that we knew we wanted to have in the book. So after we went through that list, there's another really good tool called the Cartoonists of Color database, as well as Queer Cartoonist database. These were put together by another comic creator named Mari Naomi. These databases work hand in hand. They go hand in hand, so you can actually filter and find queer people of whatever ethnicity you want to find. So we looked for queer Black people on the database, and there were a few people on there that we didn't know that I reached out to and you know, said, I really like your sample works here. Would you be interested in doing an anthology? And some of them said yes. And then after that, the third thing that we did was, you know, because we want to have like a really diverse book, even within this idea of being queer and Black, there's still a lot of ways of being queer and Black. Not all of us are the same. So in an effort to not overlook anything, we also actually had a call for submissions. We just had an open call where people who wanted to try to be in the book could pitch us their stories and their artwork, and we could make connections that way. And we ended up getting quite a few people from that as well. So it's been this really organic way of putting the book together, making sure the stories are all diverse and no one's telling the exact same story. And it's been coming together.
Yeah, that's interesting because it's interesting to me that crowdfunding is one of the places that anthologies thrive.
Yeah,
because DC and Marvel and stuff like that, I mean, DC does one occasionally, like a summer one. One time they had a summer computer one, which to this day I can't figure out why they did that. but that, you know, the anthologies don't do all that well in the mainstream, quote unquote. But whenever I look out on crowdfunding, I find lots and lots of anthologies. And I think the great thing about it is it allows people like yourself to reach out to other people with similar interests. And you get to, it's kind of a little tool for publicity for the stuff that you do normally. Yeah. Are you going to include ways to like contact the creators or to follow up on their product if they like what they see in the book?
Oh, absolutely. All of the creators in the book will have, you will have a bio section in the back of the book, so you can learn more about all of the creators and get their contact information. You can find them on social media. That's exactly why I love anthologies. Exactly what you were saying is that they're like little tours for you to go through a lot of different creators and see a lot of different things. I feel like it's like it's almost more bang for your buck too, because instead of getting, you know, one 24-page comic for a certain amount or so, you get, you know, a whole handful of comics for this amount. I feel like it's a good price, in my opinion. So I've always been a fan of anthologies because of that. You can see so many different people's works.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also draw as well as edit. There's two pieces of art from you. There's a person with like dreadlocks, I think, on it. And then there's another person with a don't touch shirt on.
Yeah.
Those are both yours. Are those, do you have like art pages as well as story, or how's that work?
Yeah, I'm going to have a story inside the book as well, that I've written and drawn. The one image that you're talking about with the person who has twists, they with the pink shirt on, that's one of the characters that's in my story for We Belong. That ended up being that was a sketch that I put together for my Patreon a while back. And when we were deciding to do this book, that ended up somehow just being a good promotional image. And then the image kind of got out there, and I decided to incorporate that character into the book and write a story for them. So that character, there is more to that character that you'll find out if you get the book. And the other image that's up there, the don't touch image, is just an illustration that I did a few years ago that I thought would make a good art print if you wanted to add that to your book when you're on Zoop.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm just curious because the Zoop has several different levels to it. You can get a PDF, which is what I often do these days because I've got a stack of things I'm supposed to read that are as tall as me.
Yeah, I totally understand that.
So who did the cover, by the way? There looks like there's a black female with a crown on. Is that who did that cover?
That cover is by Jay Hero, who has worked with Milestone before. And Jay Hero also has a story within the book. What's really cool about Jay Hero's story is that Jay is known as an artist and has been creating a character that he's been wanting to explore for a long time. And so he's actually debuting that character in We Belong, and is also debuting as a writer for the first time because he's completely written and drawn this story. And it will be a story that he takes after We Belong and continues to grow with, because it's this character that he's been, you know, thinking about for a long time and wanting to do something with. So I'm really excited for people to see his story, especially.
Well, let me get back to your illustration, because there's an enamel pin of that illustration that I see. It's available as an add-on.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. So, I've never done
an enamel pin before, so it was really cool that Stack Deck Press wanted to add that.
Mm-hmm. And then there's a T-shirt with that on it. So it you got that illustration kind of all over the place.
Yeah, I was thinking, expecting that illustration to pop off, but it kind of did.
Isn't that cool? Because it's interesting. You never know when you do artwork what's going to resonate with people. It really takes, you know, some to work. Now, there's some interesting levels on there that I just wanted to ask about. You get two LGBTQ+ historical coloring books you can get for $20 as an add-on. Where does that come from? Who does that?
Those, I'm actually not sure who the artists of those are, but those are previous books that Stack Deck Press has done over the years. They Stack Deck Press does a series of coloring books that have all been queer historical figures. I believe that those books have various artists, like all of the pages in them are done by different queer artists. There was a third coloring book that I believe Stack Deck Press is sold out of, so it's not part of this deal, but I actually had an image in that coloring book, which was a different one. But yeah, it's kind of cool because, you know, We Belong is all fiction, but if you wanted to add on these coloring books, they're nonfiction. These are actual historical queer figures, and it has descriptions of each and they're coloring books, so you can have fun and color them if you want to.
Cool. I just noticed the name of the character that you're drawing is Pinkie Pie. I didn't realize that until just now. I saw that. Now, there's also, you can buy original art for $100. And as we're talking, one person has already claimed that. So that's pretty good. Do you know what art they claimed?
Well, it's going to be various art from the creators of the book. There are some, unfortunately, a lot of the creators working today on this book, including myself, do a lot of digital work. So there's not a whole lot of original art actually from the book, but there are a lot of paintings or illustrations not done digitally that the creators have done that they've offered up. And so if anyone is interested in that, then they can, I don't believe that there is a gallery of the original art. I believe you have to contact Zoop to let them know. You'll be able to view the original art and then pick which piece you'd like.
Looks like you have to email hello@wearezoop.com.
Yeah.
Now, there's a level on here that really fascinates me. I don't think I've ever seen this on a crowdfunding thing before. For $500, you get a lifetime supply of Stack Deck Press books. One copy of every book that Stack Deck Press will publish from here on out, including collaborations with our friends at Prism Comics. That means just this year you'll be receiving not only We Belong, but copies of the graphic memoir A Good Sport and the Polyamory Coloring and Activity Book. Is that one of the two, or is that a different book?
That's a different one. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So yeah, Stack Deck Press has a whole line of the coloring books. But that tier wasn't originally there, and Stack Deck Press decided they wanted to really go all in on this Zoop campaign. And yeah, for $500, you could get every book that Stack Deck Press publishes from here until the company doesn't exist anymore, I guess. Every time a book, and they usually put out a good two or three books a year at least, sometimes more. So yeah, anything in the future that they put out, you would be guaranteed a copy of it.
I've never seen that before. That is, it's really cool. I usually see people giving levels about getting drawn into stories and stuff like that. And I did that one time. I was in a comic that somebody actually had a level that I could afford, because usually it's hundreds of dollars, and somebody actually did it for 80. And I said, okay, that one I'm going to take. And so I got drawn into a book about a zombie Moby Dick. I was one of the crew members on the ship that was chasing the zombie Moby Dick, and they took my glasses off, and so I didn't recognize myself. I had to ask the creator, which one am I again? I don't see me in there. And then he pointed out that you don't have glasses on. Oh, that's right. Zombies wouldn't wear glasses. So I didn't recognize myself. It would
be kind of funny to see a zombie with glasses, though.
I would. But of course, they're on a ship, and they're supposedly dead from the ship that originally chased Moby Dick. And so they would never have had glasses.
Oh, that's true.
On the ship. So anyway, that's what that was.
We actually did consider doing that, having a tier where you could be drawn into the comic. But when we were discussing that, it became a very hard thing to navigate, because we have this book that specifically we want to center and promote queer Black people. And if we were to have something where you could be drawn into a comic and someone who is not queer or Black pledges that to be drawn into a comic and get a special experience with this comic, it kind of started to, you know, as we thought about it, we realized it kind of started to defeat the purpose of the comic. And we also didn't want to put it up and be discriminatory where we say you can only pledge this tier if you are queer or black. So it became a really weird thing that we just decided let's save that for the next project. Let's do that on another one.
Okay. So, 'cause you can maybe figure a way to do those kinds of things and be more inclusive in that way. But there's an interesting one. There's a level, you can get 5 copies of the book for $70. And the people, as we're talking, have 2 people have already claimed that. So there's lots of things going. There's a signed book and print bundle with the Pinkie Pie on it. And 4 people have claimed this one. And then there's an everything package. I always wish I could buy that one. For $100, you be the ultimate supporter and earn our eternal gratitude. Get the trade paperback signed, the PDF, an archival print, T-shirt, enamel pin, and stickers for $100. 6 people have already claimed that. So that's good. But now, by the time this posts, I imagine these numbers will jump up. The biggest one that I see on here is the printed copy for $30. As we're talking, 79 people have already claimed that.
Yeah,
I think that'll go up.
I hope so. Like the book itself, I mean, all of the rewards that we have on there are really fun and great, but the book itself is really the most important thing. Like even if it's whether it's the printed version or the PDF version, just being able to get the anthology itself and read all of these creators' works, that's what I'm most excited about, for everyone to see the actual book.
Now, if people are signing the book, are you and Victor? It says on here the editors are going to sign it. I was wondering, with all these creators, how are you going to get all the creators to sign all that? That would be
I wish we could get everyone to sign it, but the logistics would be, you know, kind of hard to figure out, just because we have creators all over the world that are in this book. Mostly in the U.S. We do have a creator from Venezuela who's in the book. It would be hard to get everyone to sign it, but definitely what will be cool is you can get Victor and I to sign it. But then you can also, if you go to a convention where some of these creators are, you can take it up to them and have them sign it in person, and then, you know, have a little conversation with them, get to know them, which would be, that would be, you know, the best bet.
The first time I went to San Diego, I had bought all these books because I like the harder to find and more diverse, you know, kinds of books. And I was walking by, and I looked up at the banner behind it. And it was a book for called Vietnam America, and because I'm always interested in discovering other cultures and what goes on in those cultures, and that book helped me understand that group in particular. And I stopped and I turned to the guy and said, "Oh, I read this book. I really like this book." And he was like shocked. I said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah, I go around looking for these kinds of books because I love this kind of storytelling. That's not only is it entertaining, but it's informative." And so for me, I just love the book and stuff. And so I'm always, you know, looking for these kinds of things. And I think this book would do the same. I mean, even if you're not black and queer, you probably could learn a lot and help understand that experience. I think it looks like it not only is going to be entertaining, but like I said, it's going to be informative. And I think people are going to come away with a different perspective.
I hope so. I mean, what's great about any kind of media, whether it's movies or comics, or, you know, you can kind of step outside of the real world for a moment and when it's fiction, and experience something different. And sometimes that's experiencing a totally different, lifestyle than your own, a totally different culture, like you said. That's something that I really enjoy too. I love watching, foreign films and reading, foreign books and such as well.
Yeah, I have a great big collection of European comics. For a while, Marvel actually printed European comic books under a different label. And I bought those because they were so, because sometimes the storytelling is very different. American storytelling has a certain way of doing things. I also like British books too, because they tend to look at things and tell the stories in a different way than we do. And so for me, this is the kind of book that I'm really drawn to because of that. And I just think it's going to be really great, because there's like 20, trying to count, like about 20 creators, not including you and Victor there. Do you know, by the way, what the story is that it's going to be in there that you're doing? Do you have a name for it or anything yet?
Yeah, my story is called Soft Serve, and it takes place in like a New York neighborhood, and you have Pinkie Pie, and Pinkie Pie's best friend is named Lemony, so it's kind of a play on these desserts and kind of softer things. So they're both guys, they're both men, but they're very soft and effeminate men. And it's all about, you know, a lot of times we get a lot of hate when a guy is perceived as soft or is a little more effeminate, and they aren't like the macho guy. They aren't the typical, the typical guy that you expect, the all around American guy. My story focuses on what it would be like if these more effeminate guys lived in a neighborhood where they were just fully loved and accepted, and what that would be like. So they're soft, and people are fine with that. So it's kind of imagining, like, you know, this world where we just accepted people and loved people for who they are.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things too, if you want to see samples of what the some of the artwork is going to be, you go to zoop.gg/seasoncat/webelong, all one word. And there are several art pages in there. One page says Burning Courage on it. Another one is Luminous Flux by Amy Campbell. And there's two pages that's set in the village in Detroit. And there's that Rupert Kinnard, some of that, his pages are there. And other ones that I don't recognize, doesn't say who they are, but you can get an idea. Because one thing I'm impressed by is the variety of styles of storytelling in it, too. Was that part of your concern, or one of the things you were trying to accomplish was to have a nice variety in there instead of like everything looking about the same?
Yeah, I definitely wanted to have a variety and some diversity with these stories. Like we have Jay Hero's story, as I was saying, he's worked with Milestone, so he's more of a classic superhero fan, and he is doing art that looks very mainstream. It's very polished and it's very well put together. Those first two sample pages up there are from his story. But then we have a lot of independent creators who have they don't have the mainstream style, but they have more of a like folk or cultural style that's amazing. Like Awan Mance is another one of our creators who is doing a story that is set on a Pride cruise ship in space. And it's a lot of fun. And Awan's art style is very, very recognizable because it's very unique and comes from a lot of there are a lot of tones of Black culture in it. Awan just recently put out another book called 1001 Black Men, where it's just portraits that Awan did of different Black men. And that was also published by Stack Deck Press. So I'm really excited to have Awan on this book. That 1001 Black Men was rated as ranked as one of the most important queer comics in the past decade, I believe. Like the top 30 queer comics or something like that. I'm forgetting the exact number, but it got ranked up there. So I'm really excited to have Awan be a part of this book. And so there are a lot of different styles and a lot of different creators coming from different places with their styles. It's all reflected in their art.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, there's a timeline on the Zoop.gg page, too. Completion of stories. We expect to have all the stories by the creators by the end of the crowdfunding campaign, as you were saying. And the book assembled by mid-October and send the book to print by late October or early November. Fulfillment, as you said, was in December 2023. So that's a good thing to do. So the stack is a couple of things. You mentioned your Patreon. Why don't you talk about how people can sign up for your Patreon?
Well, my Patreon is at patreon.com/William O. Tyler. It's just my personal Patreon. It's not Stack Deck Press. But on there, I'm running my comics, Anxious Acts, which is all about this character who is so anxious about everything. Like, he's very straightforward on the outside, but in his head, he's very anxious about every little thing. That he develops this anxiety monster that kind of hangs off of his shoulder and whispers things into his ear all the time and just gets him into a big panic. So it's a horror comic about, you know, it kind of stemmed out of the pandemic. I was having a lot of anxiety when the pandemic hit about what was going on in the world. And so this comic kind of stemmed out of that and just me being able to explore the thoughts that I have about the world or about myself in the world or, and how I'm perceived by people. So that's one of the comics on my Patreon. The other comic, is actually a more adult comic. It's called Siren O. And it's about a modern day siren who, you know, has all of the historical things we know about sirens. You know, they're very charming. They will draw you to them. But he doesn't necessarily, like the attention that he gets. So it's exploring, you know, that kind of thing. And that character is also queer and black. So yeah, that's my Patreon is kind of fun, but also kind of not safe for work. Sometimes.
Okay. Well, what about social media and stuff? Is there ways to follow you on social media?
Yeah, I'm at William O. Tyler at just about all social medias. I just recently signed up on Blue Sky, so I'm at a bunch of them now. You can find me on them. And you can also find Stack Deck Press on just about all of them as well, just at Stack Deck Press. And we're doing lots of updates for We Belong. I'm spotlighting a lot of the creators, and we'll do more updates on Zoop as well. But on our social media, we have a lot of more images. You can see more of the interior pages and more of the character designs and work in progresses that are happening. So, yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, it's a really fascinating book. If this goes well, is there a chance of doing another one of these if things turn out pretty successfully?
I think so. Like I said, we had a lot of creators who were interested in doing the book, but unable to just because of scheduling. And there are still a lot of queer creators that we didn't know of as we were putting this book together, and it's a little too late for them to jump on it, or just didn't, you know, have anything ready for this round. So I'm sure we could put together two or three different books. And also, you know, with this book being specifically sci-fi and fantasy, it might be a fun idea to put together another book that's got a different genre. Like, we could have a drama one, or a horror one, or a romance one. You know, there are so many angles that we could do with it that I think we should definitely do another one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, boy, it sounds like there's a whole bunch of quality in there to get out. So, again, it's called We Belong. It's on Zoop.gg, and the exact website is Zoop.gg/C/cat/We Belong. And, William, it's been great fun to talk with you. We'll have to talk again when other projects come out and good things like that, because I think this is going to be a big success. And I hope that everything works out real well so that you get to do more of these in the future. So I would just say keep it up.
Thank you very much. And thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure. I wasn't sure how many people were going to respond to this project, but I'm so happy that people are responding and people like yourself want to talk more about it and learn more about it. So, yeah, thank you very much.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.